Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, June 27th, 2010, and this is show number 266. Well, this has been an exhausting and exciting week for an Apple fanboy like me, but we actually have a review of the Sprint Evo for today's show to kind of give, you know, the illusion of balance to the show. Before we dig in, though, I wanted to remind you of an easy, pain-free, and zero-cost way to help support the show and my gadget habit that gives me all this great content. Next time you want to buy something at Amazon, simply go to podfeet.com first and type in your Amazon search into the little Amazon search box on the left-hand side of the site. If you do that, it acts just like regular Amazon search. The price isn't any different, but I get a small, very small percentage of what you buy for them. A lot of people have been doing it, and I'm really grateful to all of you that have. It really does help pay the bandwidth bills. All right, enough panhandling for today. We'd better jump in and get started. All right, let's go back first to when the iPad came out. People had options. They could pre-order and have it delivered to their house, or they could reserve the iPad and pick it up in the store. I looked at those options and thought that in-store pickup sounded grand. You see, having things delivered to my house is always problematic in some way. They try to deliver when I'm not home, and then they leave it in a warehouse in a nasty part of town telling me I have to wait until 8:30 at night to go get it. It just makes me nuts. Back when Rose came to visit, she was nice enough to have a case of wine shipped to us, yay, but they tried to deliver while I was at work, and then they put it in a warehouse 19 miles from my house in a really creepy part of Los Angeles and said, wait until dark and then come out. Well, I also realized that if I had it sent to my house, and even if I waited there for it, it would surely be delivered at the last minute in the day, which would drive me around the bend. So I took the option on the iPad to have it delivered to the Apple store and just wait in line there. Steve and I got in line around 8 a.m., and I had my iPad by, I don't know, it was like 9:30. All day I got to play with it and enjoy the excitement of having the newest, coolest device on day one, while everyone who had it delivered had to wait until the afternoon. Now, let's fast forward to iPhone 4 reservations. The same options were there, deliver or in-store pickup. Well, this was clearly a no-brainer, right? Why wouldn't I choose in-store pickup? So all day long on reservation day, I tried to get in, but I wasn't super frantic about it. I had an iPhone 3GS, so I wasn't desperate for a new phone. In fact, mine was actually just fine. I just wanted the new phone. Eventually, someone on Twitter tipped me off to the iPhone iPad application. I was able to jump in and reserve my 16-gigabyte iPhone. See, I'm not completely spoiled. I didn't go for the 32-gig model this time. All right, let's talk a little bit about the office where I work. A bunch of the guys I work with all wanted to get the iPhone together, so they decided we should all meet up together at the Manhattan Beach store at 6 a.m. We had a plan, all five of us. I thought it sounded a little bit early, but since they had a party plan and all, I thought I'd join them. Most of them didn't have reservations, so they figured they better get there super early at 6 a.m. Now, my friend Tammy across the street was going too, but she was just being silly. She decided to go at 4:30 in the morning. I'm telling you, I scoffed at her. I mocked her. I suggested that the cheese had slipped off her cracker that she was going that early. And then research assistant Niraj discovered that there was a new Apple store opening in Cerritos near his house. They started chatting, all the boys in the organization here started chatting, and they realized if you waited at that store without a reservation, at least no one had a reservation, so you were kind of all in the same boat. Then Niraj decided that he and his three kids should spend the night and join the and have a party all night long. I don't know how he convinced his three teenage kids to spend the night on the sidewalk, but he did. I did hear a rumor that he slept in the car for a while, but that is unsubstantiated rumor at this time. So anyway, all of my friends who were going to have this big party at Manhattan Beach, they suddenly bail on me and they all go over to Cerritos instead. I felt abandoned. Well, anyway, I had talked to my buddy Ron earlier and I knew he was going to Manhattan Beach. So he and I decided to meet up at 6:30 a.m. That seemed a little over the top, but you know, I'm crazy that way. Got up at the crack of dawn to be there at 6:30. So I picked up some Starbucks and we got in line actually around 6:15. Now, where in the line did that put us, you ask? Well, I took a screenshot from Google Maps, the satellite view. I put it in the show notes so you can see that we were actually a quarter of a mile from the entrance to the mall. This should have been our first hint that something was going to go horribly wrong. Well, shortly after we got there, I realized that the woman behind me was scowling and making cranky noises, so I kind of edged away from her and I started eyeing the people around me to see who was thinking maybe they could have fun here. I started talking to these people and I said, "You know, it seems to me we have a choice on how to react to this. We can be cranky and annoyed and stand in line way too long, or we could choose to have fun and stand in line way too long. We stand in line a long time either way. What do you say if we go for the good time?" Well, luckily, they jumped at the challenge. Steve the dentist and Jason the air traffic controller were the first people I started to play with, and they rose to the fun challenge immediately. Then there was Angry Headphone Steve, but I'll have to explain the Angry Headphone part title a little bit later. One of my favorite people in line was Samira, the pre-law student. She laughed at all my jokes and was really kind to everyone. I think she's a very empathetic person. For example, when I told them all the story of Mark Zuckerberg's meltdown on stage, she actually felt bad for Mark. I was ready to go in for the kill on that one, you know? All right, so now fast forward to around 8:30, and we've moved, maybe 100 feet so far. We seem to make giant leaps, but only about once an hour. Well, Ron starts looking at his watch and announces that he has to get a blood test at 9:15. This is a concern because clearly we're going to be in the store by then. So we make a contingency plan. He has a paper copy of his confirmation email. So on it, I had him write down his name and acknowledge that Allison Sheridan was allowed to buy his iPhone for him. He gives me his credit card, and then I took a photo of him with the paper with his driver's license clearly showing his face as proof that the real Ron was letting me do this. We're nervous, but, you know, he goes to his blood test. Well, around 10 in the morning, Steve the dentist realizes he has to go take care of some patients, so he calls up Sophia the receptionist to stand in line for him. I had to give Steve the dentist a really hard time for doing this because Sophia the receptionist was wearing the wrong shoes. These were not just high-heeled shoes. They were stilts. I mean, I'm talking stiletto heels like 4 inches high with 2-inch platforms on the front. I'm telling you, my feet hurt just looking at them. She was dressed so nicely because she was going to her son's graduation later in the day. Well, luckily, Steve the dentist did come back to relieve Sophia, and she was on her way. I got to tell you, the people at Apple did a great job of keeping us happy and not unruly. Now, they didn't do this by giving us any information on what was going on or telling the people without reservations whether they were wasting their time or, say, I don't know, giving an estimate of how long we'd be there so we could make informed decisions. No, you know, none of that occurred to them at all. But they did feed us. We had breakfast paninis that were marvelous, and later we had some nice turkey and roast beef sandwiches. We had water and tea, and finally we had the best cupcakes I've ever had in my life. I'm not kidding you here. That chocolate icing was so good I wanted to write a song about it. I gotta go get me some more of those. Well, you may be figuring out by this time that we do end up in this line for a very long, long, long time. At one point, we heard a legend of a stamp lady, a hand stamp lady. We craned our necks and hoped to see her, but alas, we were not visited by hand stamp lady. Eventually, we realized that hand stamp lady must be a mythical creature that you must capture with unicorn tears. It's possible we were delirious by this time. It was around noon, and we'd made it up the stairs by now, so technically we were actually on mall property. We were grateful for the shade of Macy's as we'd all dressed for the chilly morning marine layer that graces the South Bay throughout the month of June. But now the sun was blazing down because it's high noon. Well, eventually, Angry Headphone Steve can't stand it anymore and he announces he's going shopping in the Apple store. Now, you might think that the line would go crazy and not let him back in. But I'm telling you, after 4 to 6 hours, we're kind of like a family now. We let each other go potty, go shopping, whatever anybody needs to do. So he wanders off and he comes back with a very expensive set of headphones. But for some reason I never quite grasped, he's very angry about them. It was unclear whether he was angry because he was stuck in this line, angry because he spent too much money on the headphones, or angry because they were mean to him in the store, but he declared his headphones to be angry. Hence the name Angry Headphone Steve. Well, a couple of other guys in line went and bought the bumper case that Apple is selling. It's basically a rubber band that goes around the phone with metal buttons built into it, all for $29. It's also good, in theory, they say, at fixing that pesky antenna problem everyone's yapping about. Well, I didn't go buy it, and now I'm kind of regretting it. But luckily, my buddy Danny did buy it, and he didn't like it, so I'm just going to buy his. The reason I want it is because the new iPhone has sort of sharp edges that kind of annoy me. Most people don't mind them, but it's just not comfy to me. It's nice also that it'll keep the phone up off the surface it's sitting on. I have this fear of sliding the phone and scratching the back glass, even though Steve swears this glass isn't scratchable. Oh, yeah. Remember that? Nothing's going to scratch. I promise. Well, Ron had to leave a couple of more times to go back to work, but curiously, we were still there when he got back. At one point, I declared that it was my turn to go to work because it was really killing me that I was taking vacation time to stand the stupid line. I mean, I could be on the beach or something. So like I said, we're moving maybe 50 feet every hour. And so I told Ron, if the contractions get closer than, say, a half hour apart, call me and I'll come back then. So I hopped in the car, drove to work, which was, I mean, I work like 5 minutes away. I put the car in park and my phone rang. Ron says, Al, hurry back. We just moved 200 feet. Oh, no. So I race back to the office. I'm stressed beyond belief that I've stood in that stupid line for over 6 hours now. And now I'm in danger of not getting back in time to get my phone. I had to park I parked in the Fry's parking lot and I had to hike down through a ravine to get back, only to have the line not move again for nearly 2 hours after that. Okay. Well, the good news is that since I was coming back from the car, I was able to bring an important survival tool, my MacBook Pro, so we could use it as an iPhone, iPad battery charger. You see, by this time, all our iPhones were out of juice and even the iPad was looking weak. I think that our one-hour-long Bluetooth-enabled Scrabble game took a lot out of our devices. It's kind of funny to use a $2,500 device to charge an iPhone, but you know, sometimes you use the tools you got at your disposal. I realized at this point, only about like 8 hours into the adventure, that maybe I should have brought my FastMac IV with me to keep the iPhone charged up. So I called Kyle and I asked him if he'd bring it to me. I also had him bring the Qualcomm power stick so that my friend John could get his BlackBerry charged at the same time. Now, I do have to make a commercial interruption to all of the people who tweeted me throughout the day telling me that they would have never stood in a line this long. You need to realize that none of us would have either. Who in their right mind would stand in line for an entire day to get a stupid phone? But it was one of those things like once you'd invested 2 hours, you figure, you know, come on, how much longer could it be? 4 hours in, you simply can't give up because then it'd be stupid that you wasted 4 hours. Well, I mean, 6 hours, you'd be crazy to leave, right? Well, that's how it went for us. The logic continued to say, you must stay in line. All right, so around 3 p.m, we finally turned the corner to where we could see the end in sight. And that's when I started to lose it. I just started to get edgy. You know, my dark side started to get the best of me. That's when I really needed law student Samira to keep my spirits up. I came out of it when they brought us the cupcakes from heaven, though. But, you know, those around me were worried at that time that, you know, what about when the sugar high lets her crash? All right, way back at the beginning of the day when the store opened, there was a bit of a ruckus I should tell you about. Now, remember, my crazy friend Tammy was way up in front because she got there early enough. So we were getting up-to-the-minute updates from the front lines. The lineup this time had been kind of a mixture of people with reservations and without. Normally, I would look down my nose at those who had not had the presence of mind to reserve an iPhone. But in this case, the reservation system was so borked that I had to figure all of these people had tried to get a reservation. So I kind of felt like all of us should be in this together. I didn't feel special that I was smart enough to get in because it was just the luck of the draw. Now, my friend John, for example, had tried all day long on reservation day, and so had law student Samira. On the other hand, a part of me wanted to finally get that line moving. Well, anyway, early on, at the very beginning, the Apple folks started trying to separate the line. So they put the first 50 reserved people in a separate line. But evidently, according to Tammy, a car came up, somebody jumped out and got right into that newly formed reserve line. As you can well imagine, everyone in the line started going berserk. Tammy said a near riot broke out, so they had to stop separating the lines. But anyway, by the time we got near the front of the line, they finally did start separating us. But it was bittersweet, as at this time, Samira had been, you know, she was part of our family, and she had to leave us, and so did John, and they had to go out to this other line and in this holding pen for the reservation list. It was a sad time. I did go visit Samira later, and she'd made new friends and assured me that they were being nice to her, so she was in good hands, at least. Okay, we need to do an update now on my buddies out in Cerritos. Remember those guys that abandoned me? Well, since Niraj spent the night there, he had a pretty good spot in line. I think he was only about 100 back. And when the other guy showed up, bearing donuts to assuage the angst of the people who would now be in line behind them. They were not mugged because Niraj explained to those people that he and his three kids were not buying iPhones. They were simply holding a place for these guys. They joined Niraj around 6 a.m., I think, and by 10 a.m. they had iPhones. And they rubbed my nose in it. I think it was worse for one of the guys, one of my friends in line, though. He had driven past the Cerritos store early in the morning, saw how long the line was, and figured, oh, man, it's got to be way better at Manhattan Beach, right? Oh, man, he was depressed all day. He was really sad. Well, around 4 p.m., the mythical hand stamp lady finally came to us. We were thrilled. But then we realized Ron wasn't back from work yet. I'm kind of embarrassed to say that some of the other people in line noticed that Ron wasn't back yet. They went, wait a minute, what about Ron? Anyway, Steve the dentist had to go back to work too. We figured he was skipping the whole Novocaine thing, just rushing his clients through, yanking out teeth, but we never saw him again. I did hear him via email later in the evening, and he didn't end up getting back in time, so I don't know what he's doing about getting an iPhone. He sounded like he was okay about it, though. I did put a picture, by the way, of all my goofy friends from the party line that we had. I put a picture of them in the show notes so you can see what they look like. All right, so finally, at 4:45 p.m., Ron and I, along with air traffic controller Jason and angry headphone Steve, were allowed entrance into the hallowed halls of Apple. And about 7 minutes later, we were out. I have no idea why we could get in and out of there in 7 minutes, and a line of approximately 550 people ahead of us at the beginning, with at least 10 people helping people. That should have been done in a lot less than 10 and a half hours, right? I guess it would be 6.5 hours, but still, I would like those 3.5 hours of my life back. Well, I have to say, the joy I felt at finally getting the iPhone was tempered by sadness when I realized that John and Samira were still in line when we left. John got there way earlier than me, but he was in the reservationless pen. I checked with both of them the next day, and John ended up a total of 15 and a half hours in line. And Samira, at 10 p.m., she was turned away. But she was given a ticket to come back and stand in line again the next day. She ended up in line a total of 20 hours to buy the iPhone. Man, I sure hope she liked it after all that. Well, like I said, I put a picture of all those goofy friends in the show notes, and I also put a picture of what I looked like, sunburned and exhausted, when I got home from that adventure. Well, I guess I've been yapping for a long time. Let's see, about 17 minutes here, and I haven't told you about the iPhone yet. But first, let's hear a word from our sponsors. One of the reasons I love Screen Steps is that the developers don't ever seem to stand still. This week, I got an email from them asking about whether I'd be interested in having a capability they're going to call Screen Steps Work Group. Now, here's the problem to be solved. You have a team of people inside your company all working on tutorials internally. You need a way to share the tutorials without emailing the package files back and forth, causing yourself a world of hurt because you're stepping on each other's toes as you work on the same tutorial. Not only did the developers ask if I was interested, they asked if I'd like to help them make sure they go in the right direction as they develop this new product idea. Now, I have a suspicion that it wasn't just me, that they may have asked all ScreenSteps users to help them with this. I love the idea of ScreenSteps Work Group and will definitely be giving them ideas and advice on how I think this should work. Well, they asked, didn't they? If you haven't got a documentation tool that makes you excited to write a new tutorial, then you're using the wrong tool and should run over to screensteps.com and check out ScreenSteps Desktop. Now, don't forget to use the coupon code NOCILLA, that's my name spelled backwards in all capital letters, for 25% off the purchase price when you get there. All right, enough of my gruesome adventures getting the darn iPhone. What about the phone itself? Now, it's important to think about your view of the phone because it's tempered by what kind of phone you're currently using, whether you should get one. If some of you have, trashed, broken iPhones with the back falling off like Samira did, then this is the coolest thing you may ever own. If you have a first-gen iPhone or even an iPhone 3G, the speed increase will blow your hair back. In my case, I was coming from the iPhone 3GS, so the change is not going to be nearly as dramatic. When I heard about the Retina display and how you aren't supposed to be able to see any pixels on the screen, I took out my 3GS and I tried to see the pixels on it. I'll be darned if I could. I was dubious that the new screen would really make a difference to these 52-year-old eyes. But I gotta tell you, the most dramatic thing on the iPhone 4 so far to me is the screen. It's simply drop-dead gorgeous. When I look at the screen without my reading glasses, I can actually see a lot more on the 4 than I can on the 3GS. I wouldn't have thought that were actually possible. When I first saw the phone on Gizmodo, I remember thinking that the edges of the phone looked kind of sharp, and I wondered how comfortable it would be in the hand. Well, guess what? It's uncomfortable in the hand. Now, these corners are chamfered, but it still feels sharp and, I don't know, industrial to me. When Tammy bought her iPhone, she did buy the rubber band case from Apple, and I got to hold it. It felt really nice. So I'm going to buy Danny's off of him because he doesn't like it, like I said before. Now remember, the iPhone front and back are made of glass. When Tammy told me she'd read that, I thought she was all wet. But no, the front and back is made of glass. Now, Steve Jobs swears that it's unscratchable, but let's see a show of hands on how many of you trust him on that one. I did get my $38 settlement check back on the first iPod Nano scratching, but that's a memory that does seem to last that his stuff scratches. Every time I set the iPhone down on a desk or a table and I accidentally slide it a little bit, I freak out thinking that what if there's a grain of something on that desk and it scratches the glass? When I get the rubber baby buggy bumpers from Apple, then it will keep the glass off the table. Now, they also claim that the battery would be better than the 3GS, but it hasn't blown my socks off yet. By noon on the first day, my battery was down to 65%. I hadn't made a phone call or played a movie. I had played with it a bit, but certainly nothing like I do on, say, a conference day or something like that. Since my Fastback IV doesn't fit the new iPhone, I sure was hoping I wouldn't have to buy a new one for my conference days, but it sure looks like I will need to do that. Unfortunately, they don't have any available yet over at fastmac.com, but I'm going to keep checking and make sure they get one shipped to me eventually. All right, next up on the nice list is the camera. Having a high-resolution camera, finally, is a real joy, and the high-def video it shoots is spectacular. It was Taco Bell Thursday, the day I got my iPhone, so of course that's what I chose for my first video. It's not exactly James Cameron quality, but at least you can see it is 1280 by 720. The crispness is just fantastic on this video. I posted it on YouTube, of course, and there is a link in the show notes, so you can see my cinematographic. How do you say that? Cinematographic? I don't know. My talents. I originally uploaded straight to YouTube from the iPhone camera app, only to be disappointed that it was downsampled to 360 instead of 720 HD, even though I did do the upload on Wi-Fi. I deleted that video, and I re-uploaded the video from my Mac to get the high-def version up there. I still don't think I should have had to do that. By the way, they did also put an LED flash on the iPhone, which is great for stills, but it also works on video. I had no idea that was even going to be an option, so that was fun to discover. Then I had a wild idea. What if I could use the iPhone 4 as a video input to iMovie? That would be so cool, wouldn't it? Well, don't get your hopes up, sugar. No dice. I tried it in iMovie and in iMovie HD. Oh, and iMovie 09 and iMovie HD, and neither one of them recognized the camera, even though I had it plugged in via USB. Oh, well, it was a nice dream. Well, speaking of video, let's talk about the new, what's it called, Faceplant, Face-to-Face? I can't ever remember the name of it. It's FaceTime. I told Katie Floyd of Mac Power Users that the first person I was going to call on Faceplant was her, but I told her to expect me around 9 a.m. on Thursday. It was closer to 9 p.m. by the time I got to her, but we did make the call. And you know what? It was fantastic. Being able to make video calls from your phone, we are in the future, finally. So the way we did it was I called her on the phone first, and then where the mute button used to be on screen, you see a faceplant button. Touch that, and the other person gets a request, and if they touch their button, you're greeted by their lovely face. I guess that's why they call it faceplant. At that point, your 3G call is disconnected, so you're not wasting cell minutes. Katie and I both have really good internet speeds, and the video was flawless. There's a button on screen that lets you flip around using the back-facing, which is the better camera, and that works really, really good for getting kids on video. My friend Ben and I tested it to call his wife, and she flipped the camera around so he could see his baby son. The only downside is the person on the backside can't see the person of who they're talking to, of course. Now, this faceplant feature can only be used on Wi-Fi, but there's a tricky way around that. If you use a MiFi, which uses the Verizon or Sprint cell network, the iPhone 4 doesn't know you're on 3G. It thinks you're on Wi-Fi because that's all it can see, and it lets you use Faceplant. When Ben and I were watching his little boy using Faceplant, it was on the MiFi, and it worked really well. surprisingly well. I didn't think it would come out as good as it did. We also figured that in our testing, we figured out that you don't have to call someone first to use Faceplant. When you open their contact information on the iPhone, there's a button there too that takes you directly to Faceplant. Unless your iPhone decides not to show it to you like it did to my friend Myung. For some reason, he can only see the Faceplant button if he goes first into the iPhone app and then looks up the name in the contacts. If he goes straight into contacts, the button simply is not there. He looked it up online, and evidently it's a known bug, so that'll probably get fixed soon. Now, how about this pesky little antenna problem we're talking about? Well, here's the real problem. The real problem is that people call two antennas antennae. All right, well, listen up. Antennae are what a bug has two of, not what a phone has two of them, okay? When a phone has two, it's antennas with an S, not an E. Got it? I don't hear any of you saying antennae about an iPhone unless you're watching Bug's Life on it. You hear me? And as far as wrecking the iPhone reception, it hasn't bothered me at all. But then again, the AT&T service in my house disappeared about a year after I got my first iPhone, so how would I know? Well, we tried to test it at work, too, but we have repeaters all over the place. In fact, right when I tried to get the signal to drop on the iPhone by holding it tightly on the bottom left corner, and it wasn't dropping, Ben pointed straight above my head at a curious white cone I'd never noticed before. It was the AT&T repeater right there. All right, but I did want to get some independent facts and data about this whole antenna issue, so I called my friend Rob, who has a PhD in electromagnetics and antenna design. Seemed like he might be able to add a little bit of information here. He started by calling the hand a big bag of water. I asked what he meant, and he explained that in antenna design, they pay people a whole lot of money to create covers that are dielectrically transparent. He went on to explain that air has a dielectric constant of 1, and all other materials are measured against it. Water, which is what we're primarily made of, has a dielectric constant of 80. Well, I asked him what difference it makes to hold a big bag of water up against the antenna. He said it can shift the natural frequency that the antenna can listen at. So let's say it has two natural frequencies, one at 800 megahertz and one at 1200 megahertz. If you hold a bag of water up against it, let's say it shifts it to 913 and 1300, for example. That attenuation would cause it to not be able to catch the signal quite as well as it should. He was actually rather astonished when he found out that Apple thought it was a good idea to put the antennas on the outside where you would put your hand against them. Note that he used the word antennas, not antennae. Well, I tested Faceplant a second time with Pat Dengler, also known as Your Mac Doctor, at yourmacdoctor.com, and it worked pretty darn well for about a half hour, and then suddenly my phone just turned itself off. I had to text her right quick to tell her I didn't hang up on her. I haven't tested it enough times to be able to tell if this is going to be a common problem or a one-time fluke, but I'll be keeping my eyes open for it. Well, I wanted to test out the gyroscope, so I tried a $1 app called Eliminate: Gun Range. This game was just about my speed. You have a gun, and you shoot at targets. Kyle and I played with it, and the 3D gameplay was really cool. I'm not going to give you the link to the game, though, because after 4 levels, the game turned black. All of the levels were broken, even the levels we'd already played. I tried a couple of things to kickstart it, and I was able to get back in on occasion, but then I read the iTunes reviews, and it happened to a whole bunch of people. Bummer, but maybe the developer will get this fixed, and it'll be fun again. In any case, the gyro worked perfectly in my tests. Well, I'm sure I'll discover more cool things about the iPhone 4 in coming weeks, but if you've got a 3GS and you load iOS 4 on it, you've got an awful darn good phone, and I don't think I'd recommend upgrading it just yet. Well, except for the fact that the resale value on an iPhone 3GS is really good right now. So, it might not cost you any money at all to get the new phone. Today we recorded the Mac Roundtable, so if you'd like to hear what Katie Floyd, Bart Bouchatz, Adam Christensen, and David Sparks think about the iPhone 4 and iOS 4, you'd like to go over and check that out. It's show number 85 of the Mac Roundtable over at macroundtable.com. Well, in a moment of delightful irony, let's take iPhone 4 week and have a review of the Sprint HTC Evo. Who better to see the other side of things than Donald Burr?
Hey, Allison, Donald from Talking the Podcast here. Happy iPhone 4 week. No, I'm not here with a review of the iPhone 4. Being the contrarian that I am, instead, I'm here with a review of the Sprint HTC Evo 4G Android smartphone. First, let's talk hardware. The Evo is a very solidly well-built phone. Some might say it's a little big. It's 4.8 by 2.6 by half an inch thick, but I don't think so. It feels pretty good in my hand. Now, I have fairly average-sized man hands, so if you have more dainty hands, it might feel bigger to you. Check with your local Sprint store. They probably have a demo unit available. Go and check it out yourself. The CPU on this phone is super fast. It's a 1 GHz Qualcomm Snapdragon processor. This phone is a screamer. The screen is gorgeous. 800 by 480, beautiful, crystal clear, and razor sharp, even in daylight. The touchscreen is very responsive and supports multi-touch. Sound quality is pretty good. The earpiece is a bit tinny, but what earpiece isn't? The speakerphone, on the other hand, is really loud, so it's very difficult to miss your alarms or your phone ringing. It also has a standard 3.5mm headset jack, so you can use your standard array of wired headsets. Now, some have said that the built-in 802.11g Wi-Fi is a bit weak. Although there have been times when my Wi-Fi signal dropped to only about one bar, still I've never actually lost Wi-Fi signal. HTC is supposedly working on a software fix for this that'll be out real soon now, any day now practically. This phone has got a little trick up its sleeve, because you can use the phone's built-in Wi-Fi to share out the phone's data connection, sort of like having your own MiFi built right in. And the HTC's Wi-Fi sharing will support up to 8 devices. I've done some testing between my MiFi and the Evo's Wi-Fi sharing, and I do not notice any difference speed-wise. They both run at about the same speed. In fact, the Evo's Wi-Fi sharing works so well that I'm canceling my MiFi account. The phone also supports Bluetooth, which works very well for connecting to headsets or Bluetooth headphones. However, it does not support Bluetooth voice dialing. Supposedly, this will be fixed in the next version of Android 2.2, due out later this year. This is one of the first phones out there that supports Sprint WiMAX 4G data service. Unfortunately, however, I don't live in a 4G coverage area, so I can't really review this part of the phone. The built-in 8-megapixel camera with dual LED backlights takes pretty darn good pictures as far as cell phone cameras go, so it's perfectly ideal for snapshots, although for more serious photographic work, I'd still carry around a dedicated camera. It also shoots pretty good-looking 720p HD video. The camera does touch-to-focus just like the iPhone. There's also a front-facing camera perfect for video chatting or self-portraits. Like most smartphones, it has a variety of sensors, including accelerometer, compass, and GPS. The GPS on this phone is extremely accurate. I was able to hold a good GPS fix on the bottom floor of our 2-floor condo building. It's amazing. And with this phone's big, bright screen, it'd make a perfect stand-in for a car GPS for those few times when you might need one. The only weak point here is the battery. Now, I'm able to get a full day's use out of it, but only by judicious and careful management of my battery, like turning off a GPS or not using the mobile hotspot thing unless I absolutely have to, and so on. If you're a real geek power user and always live streaming or, you know, doing whatever, you're going to run down the battery pretty quickly. There are a variety of third-party extended life batteries out there, and there's also devices like the Techion that I reviewed a couple weeks ago, so if you're really serious phone user, you will really want to consider one of those. Now let's talk software. The Android operating system has come a long way, and I think has finally come of age as a viable smartphone OS. HTC has taken things one step further and added their own layer of software on top of Android, called the Sense UI, which includes various enhancements and social networking features. The problem here, though, is that this causes some interface inconsistencies. It certainly doesn't have the polish and thought put into it as, say, an Apple device, but still, it's quite usable. One thing that Android does way better than the iPhone, I think, though, is its notification system. First of all, Android notifications don't get all in your face like the iPhone ones do. They just put a little icon in the upper part of the screen and can optionally make a noise if you desire, or flash an LED. And if you happen to miss a notification, it sticks around, so you see a little row of icons of things that you missed. Whereas on the iPhone, if you miss a notification, that's it. No way of getting back to it ever again. Now, the HTC Sense UI's social networking features are pretty cool. It integrates your Facebook, your Twitter, and your Flickr into the Android standard contact system. So when you pull up somebody's contacts card, it'll also show their Facebook status updates, any tweets that they've made, and any pictures that they post on Flickr. Kind of similar to the way that Palm's webOS does it, only way, way better. However, it only supports one of each type of account, so you can only have one Facebook, one Twitter, and so on. Which is okay for most people, but for power users like us, who, like, for example, maybe I have my personal Twitter, and then I've got a Twitter account for my business, and then one for my podcast, and so on and so forth, this is a problem. I got around this by installing a third-party Twitter client for Android, and I use that for my other Twitter accounts. The built-in Twitter does support sharing pictures and videos using services like TwitPic. However, it does not support built-in URL shortening, so you have to manually run your URLs through something like Bitly or something before you share them. Kind of a pain. The phone is really snappy. I've owned my Evo for about a month now, and despite my worst efforts, I have yet to seriously bog down my phone. It still gels on rare occasions, but these are very few and far between. Finally, let's talk applications. This is an area where the iPhone still has the lead, but Android is playing a serious game of catch-up. According to this month's numbers, Android has some 80,000 applications as compared to the iPhone's 225,000. But all the major players are there on both platforms, and I've yet to find a task that I haven't been able to find an application for in the Android. So, final thoughts. This, I think, is the first serious contender to the iPhone to come along. If they can only get the battery life under control, then I could, without reservation, call it absolutely perfect. The phone costs $300 with a 2-year contract, and they have a $100 rebate. Or, if you go to Radio Shack, or The Shack, as they call themselves now, they will take care of the rebate for you, so all you have to do is just pay them $200. If you want to buy the phone without contract, it's $450. Check out the links that I'm sure Allison will put in the show notes for more info. Hey, are you an anime fan? Are you even remotely curious about Japanese animation? Do you live in the Los Angeles area? Well, you might want to check out Anime Expo, which is quite possibly one of the biggest anime conventions in the world. It's going on this coming weekend, Thursday, July 1st through Sunday, July 4th at the Los Angeles Convention Center. And guess what? I'm going to be speaking again. Yes, I'm putting on not one, but 2 panels at Anime Expo. The first, Anime Podcasting for Beginners, will tell you all the tips, tricks, and techniques that you need to know to start your own anime or manga podcast, or a podcast on any other subject if you want. That's going to be held Sunday, July 4th at 9 a.m. in the Live Programming 3 room. My second talk, Convention Photography 101, is for all you shutterbugs out there, even typical shutterbugs. I'll be focusing, pun, on the techniques that you can use to get better photography when you're at anime conventions, or any other convention for that matter. Check that one out, also on Sunday the 4th, at 12:30 in the Workshops 1 room. For more info on Anime Expo, check out the links that I'm sure Allison will also put in the show notes. Hope to see you there, hope you enjoyed the review, and I'll see you next time.
Well, thanks, Donald. I love your reviews. You give such good balance, like, compared to me especially. You know, you do like Mac stuff, but you like other technologies too, which helps make you a great resource to the show. I do think it's funny when Apple talks about how many apps there are and they compares to the Android store. Like they say, how many fart apps do you actually need? Well, now we have the Vuvuzela apps to help as well. Anyway, I hope some of the Nocilla castaways get a chance to check out your talks at the Anime Expo. That sounds like a lot of fun. I'd like to talk to you sometime about how to do good conference photography, because I can tell you how to do bad conference photography. I have a whole bunch of examples on how to do that. Well, I hate to admit it, but sometimes I have trouble communicating with normal people. You know the type, the kind that have lives that don't revolve around technology. Well, someone I don't have any trouble talking to is Honda Bob, because he's a geek just like us. Well, today he dropped by the house to show off his new Lenovo IdeaPad S10-3T netbook. This thing is pretty cool. It's a 10-inch screen that actually swivels around and turns into a touchscreen tablet running Windows 7. So, okay, seriously, where else are you going to find a mechanic who also loves gadgets and technology? All you have to do is have your car to get your cars maintained and repaired by Honda Bob is buy a Honda or an Acura and move to the LA or Orange County areas. And then, of course, give him a call at 562-531-2321. Or you could shoot him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HJBob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from BartB.ie. I heard you saw your mom today, Bart. Or is it mum?
Either will do. She was in the area for a wedding, so went down to have a little catch up.
Oh, that's good, because you hadn't been able to get up to see her in a while.
Well, no, she's been away, and then I've been away, and yeah, so, no, it was nice to catch up, and it was a beautiful day, so nice to get out. The hotel is, where the wedding is a very old estate, you know, stately home kind of thing.
Oh, neat.
You guys don't have them over there, but think sort of the British thing.
I've read about them.
Yeah, so it, really, really beautiful lands, and the stately home is now a hotel, so it's a fantastic place to have a wedding. Just really beautiful grounds.
Oh, cool. That sounds like fun. Nice to catch up a little bit, right?
Absolutely. Now, we should probably apologize because we have a quality problem this week that has nothing to do with Skype and everything to do with biology. I've been struggling against a particularly nasty, I don't know if it's cold or what it is, but basically I've been losing my voice on and off all week, and it was better yesterday, and now today it's really not good again.
Well, I think you sound fine. So, you know, last time we apologized and then the audio was the best we've ever had because we had to piece it together piece by piece. So it never works to apologize, I think.
I don't know. I'm just hoping my voice holds up because it's taking me a lot more effort than usual to talk. It's something I usually have no trouble with.
Well, luckily I like to talk. So between us, we should get her done. What have we got on Security Light this week? And again, for those new to the show, Security Light is where Bart can tell us about some horrid security problem, but only if there's an easy fix for us. He's not allowed to tell us we have to use JavaScript.
You mean no script?
No script. Right, sorry. No script.
Because you want to use JavaScript.
Right.
I'm very good. This proves that I'm being very good. The first story actually broke at the start of the month on June 10th, but there was no solution, so I very diligently didn't mention it until now. Okay. Now there is a solution, so now I'm telling you about it. So as weird as it was a few weeks ago, or probably a month or two ago at this stage, when Microsoft had a security flaw in their help system.
Oh yeah.
Well, they've done it again.
What was it before? It was like F11 or something?
No, if they tricked you into hitting F1 for help, then they could take over your machine. Well, now, if they send you a help URL, so Microsoft have a protocol for their help system, which is a URL starting with, I think it's HPC:// will invoke Microsoft help.
Okay.
And it's supposed to do a whole bunch of cleaning on the URL so that you can't pass it in. Basically, what the URL does is it calls a command line program, so it tries to clean up the arguments before it calls a command line program, because if you mess up the arguments, then you can run arbitrary code, and their algorithm for cleaning it up is broken. So you can run arbitrary code.
Okay. I didn't follow that.
Okay, so you go to a URL and you'll have like something blah, 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 and then a bunch of characters.
Right.
And what Windows does is it takes that URL, then calls an executable program from the command line and passes in that URL as an argument. Okay. Now, if someone gets a semicolon in there or something to make it be a separate command, then the command that wanted to execute will stop. And then after the semicolon will be another command that will also get executed to do whatever you like.
Which may not be what you wanted, but what they wanted you to do.
What they wanted, exactly. So it's probably not as simple as a semicolon, because I'm sure Microsoft were good enough to catch that.
Right.
But they have found a way to break out so that they can execute any command of their choice as well as the correct command to invoke help.
Hmm. Okay.
So pretty dangerous. The way you disable it is that you stop Windows from accepting HPC:// URLs. And at first when this advisory broke, the process for doing it was horrific. You had to use regedit to edit the registry and disable it that way. And the instructions were horrible. And there was no sign of it being actively exploited, so I didn't think it was worth bringing up here and scaring people needlessly. But now they have done one of those little fix-it buttons on their support website, so you click one button and it's done. So now I thought it really is worth telling people to do that.
So does it affect all versions of Windows? Or?
Let me just double-check. I thought it was pretty far-reaching, actually.
More modern-ish? Or?
Okay, so affected software. XP Service Pack 2, XP 64-bit, Server 2003, Server 2003 64-bit, Server 2003 SP2. So it's really an XP issue and a Server 2003 issue.
Okay.
Not affected Windows 2000 if you're still running it. Vista, Server 2008, and Windows 7.
Okay. Well, that's good. But an awful lot of people are still running Windows XP, so that sounds important.
I think it's still the most common Windows out there.
Luckily, it's finally starting to diminish. I mean, I don't think Vista took an edge off it at all, but a lot of people are going to 7 now, so that's good.
Yeah, people are just skipping over Vista and going straight to 7. It's great to see.
Yeah, really.
It's big fun this summer as we roll out 7 in work.
Oh, yeah, that'll be great. 8.
And our clients, our users seem really quite keen on the matter.
Oh, yeah. It's a good thing. It's not
exactly.
I don't even hate it. All right.
I have issues with it from time, but no, it's really quite nice.
Right.
Okay, so the next thing then is a patch to the... Okay, so we all know that iOS 4 came out this week, the latest version of the iPhone operating system, which is now, to stop confusing everyone, being called iOS instead of iPhone operating system. Because, of course, we all know that iPads and iPod Touches run the iPhone OS, and that just made for very confusing discussions.
Except, of course, iOS 4 doesn't run on the iPad yet.
Yeah,
so
but it's
added, but it adds to the confusion because it's not really the same thing.
Well, yeah.
Maybe
I guess,
it will be someday.
I'm pretty sure they're going to unite in a future version. So, but we're definitely heading towards them all being iOS.
Okay.
So Apple released iOS 4, which is an update for the second generation and later iPod Touches, the iPhone 3G and later versions of the iPhone, but not a first-gen iPhone, not a first-gen iPod Touch, and not the iPad. And where this gets worrying is that iOS 4 fixes 65 bugs from iPhone OS 3. So what this means is that there had better be an iPad update in the works very bloody soon, and they had better not make us wait until the autumn just to patch these vulnerabilities. And it means that unless they release an update to iPhone OS 3, which they don't seem to be doing because you would have expected it to come out at the same time, it means that you now cannot safely use first-gen iPhones anymore on the internet. You need to turn off all internet on them or you're not safe.
Well, wait a minute. You can run iOS 4 on the first-gen iPhones and iPod Touches. No,
No, it won't let you. It's the 3G is the lowest one it'll go on.
I knew the 3G had limited capabilities from
it. Very, very limited. I have a 3G, and iOS 4 has basically given us folders. And that's it.
What's odd is if you jailbreak it, it gives you all kinds of features, and it works just fine, according to people. But anyway.
I think people have a very different view of just fine, because my iPhone 3G is struggling with iOS 4 without multitasking. The battery life has gone a lot lower. So I really don't think it's a runner, and it's certainly not supported on the very first-gen devices. So really, if you have an iPhone first-gen, it is now end of life. Just like Tiger, it is no longer safe. You cannot use it on the internet safely.
Okay, so now this is feeling not security light here that with the iPad, I mean,
obviously. Well, no, it's security light in the sense that if you have an iPhone 3G or an iPhone 3GS,
you should
this isn't
the patch.
Just a cosmetic update. It certainly is a cosmetic update. It's a free update, and it patches 65 bugs. So don't think, oh, I don't care about folders, I'm not going to bother updating. It's not just about the folders and the multitasking. It's a security update, and the biggest one yet at 65 bugs and one iOS update. Apparently that's a record.
Okay.
But for the moment on your iPad, I would say avoid internet banking and sensitive things.
Yeah. I don't think I do much of that anyway.
I don't either, thankfully. But it worries me that they're not being prompt about this. At the moment, there are no active attacks. So it's a vulnerability in the sense that there is a potential for attack, but it's not actually being attacked yet. So for now, it's theoretical. But it worries me an awful lot that it's there.
Well, the other nice thing is now that they patched those bugs, those holes, all those holes are now public.
Exactly. That is actually really quite dangerous.
Worse, right?
Now, the chances are not all of these are going to affect all of the other devices, but for none of them to affect other devices sounds exceptionally unlikely to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The next story we have is just weird. It's just, I've never seen an update quite like it. It's an update to Opera, and the changelog has all the usual stuff in it. And then it has three lines that are just weird. Fixed an extremely severe issue. Details will be disclosed at a later date.
That's kind of vague.
So CNET spoke to an Opera spokesman and who said that it was because of responsibility disclosure practices, contingent on agreement with each individual security researcher, and other browser publishers may not yet have had time to patch their browsers. So what Opera are saying is that they have patched something which exists in other browsers too, but they're the only ones who patched it. But they won't tell us what it is.
Because they don't want to expose it until the other browser companies fix theirs?
Yeah, but it's weird. It's just weird. I really just put it in here because I've never seen update notes like it before. Fix an extremely severe issue. Details to be disclosed at a later date.
Not telling you. Neener.
Yeah, so I would not be surprised if we suddenly find other browsers patching bugs and then we find out what the hell is going on here with Opera. So Opera may be ahead of the curve on this one.
Yeah. Now, is it possible?
We don't often say...
I was going to say, is it possible to run a difference file between two versions and find out what was patched?
Well, they're binaries, so you just end up with a bunch of ones and zeros.
Oh, there it is. That one should not be there.
Yeah. Basically, no is the answer.
Okay. All right. Okay, what else?
And then we have Firefox have patched 3.5 and 3.6. And the reason it's worth mentioning, because again, it happens automatically, so we don't have to think about it, is that they've added the new feature that sounds pretty interesting to me. It's a plugin crash preventer. So Firefox suffers from the problem of every browser that no matter how good they make their browser, some Muppet makes a plugin like Flash, and your browser becomes as crashy as that plugin rather than as crashy as your really good software. So this new feature is supposed to stop Flash from taking down the whole browser.
That's kind of cool, since that's what takes my browser down.
It's what takes almost everyone's browser down, yeah.
At least
I don't know how well it works, but that's the feature they've announced, and I thought it was definitely worth mentioning.
Oh yeah, that sounds cool. I hope it speeds up soon.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Firefox is starting to feel really slow.
I'm starting to wonder if I shouldn't get a new version of Firefox with none of my old plugins and see how that browses, and I may be shocked at how fast it is.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
Because we've been upgrading and upgrading and upgrading, so goodness knows how much cruft we brought with us. It's a bit like if you've been upgrading since OS 1.1 or something.
Right. I don't think it'd be that hard to do either. I mean, you just take a screen snapshot of what your plugins are, you know, uninstall Firefox, start over.
Yeah, and maybe export your bookmarks if you use bookmarks.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I suppose you should do that.
And then you can re-import them again.
Right.
Just something to remember to do. So anyway, it could be interesting.
Okay.
Now, the last thing I have here is just an FYI. We all know that iOS 4 brings iAds with us, and one of the things that, ironically, Steve Jobs railed against this concept of analytics, well, the iAds in iOS 4 do analytics, so Apple have very kindly given a way to opt out so that the ads won't track you, and you simply, on the device itself, you go to the URL oo.opt-out.apple.com, and then that device will be opted out. So if you have two iPhones or an iPhone and an iPad, you go once in each device. Don't go on the iPad yet because it doesn't have iOS 4 yet, but when it does, you can do that too.
Okay.
It's an interesting way they're doing the opt-out, but basically the device opt-out rather than the person.
So what's wrong with having iAds have analytics on you? What's the big deal?
To be honest, I really don't want Apple to know what kind of... I don't want targeted ads. I find that really quite true. I don't think it's in... To pretend to a user that it's in my interest for them to more effectively advertise at me so that I spend more of my money against my own will, that's not good for me.
Wait, who said it was against your own will? You still have to click it and buy it. It's not against
your will. The point of ads is to get you to buy stuff that you wouldn't buy otherwise. That's the whole point of ads.
Yeah, but that's not against your own will. That's just making it so attractive you find that your own personal inability to resist comes to the forefront. Yeah,
the art of advertising is making you want.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's still not against your will. I mean, unless your will is weak.
Well, most of us have weak wills in some form or other.
But see, I would much rather, I mean, it makes me crazy that I am always inundated with these ads that have no meaning. Like my favorite example, I don't listen to it anymore since I got into podcasting, but I used to listen to KNX Radio. And it was it's an AM radio station. It's all news. It's all finance. It's business. I mean, no one who listens to this has anything but a serious business kind of job, right? This is the kind of right. people it's targeted towards. And they ran an ad for Caterpillar tractors. Okay, first of all, no one in Los Angeles knows how to use a Caterpillar tractor. Okay, there are people who use them. But, I mean, that isn't – it's not – I mean, you know, maybe you want to advertise that in Iowa or Montana or something where people buy tractors, you know. It was just ludicrous. And, you know, I go on the web and I'm seeing all this crap ads for things I would never, ever buy. I would much rather see, ooh, you know, there's a disc drive that's, you know, come up that's, you know, of a good price. Or, hey, there's a new lens for the Nikon camera. That would be much more interesting to me.
Okay, it's not a case that if you opt out of this, you get completely irrelevant ads, because the ads will be targeted at the app. So if you're in an app that does finance, you'll get financey ads. If you're in an ad that does movie reviews, you'll get movie-like ads. If you're in an app, you know, the ads are going to be targeted at the app anyway. But I don't want the ads targeted at me. I don't think it's fair for Apple to collect lots of information which they can then sell to advertisers of me, when ultimately the whole point of advertising is to part me with money I don't want to part with. I don't want to help them get my money.
I think good on them that they made this opt-out option, but I'm not going to choose it, because I would rather have my ads be more interesting, and I'm fine with them collecting it. If it helps them give me more services, they make money, I'm good.
I'd rather just pay for the app.
Well, and that's a way to go. All right, we better get into the actual meat of the show, since we've gone 15 minutes already.
Weep, okay. This topic is kind of a surprise, because I had one of those moments yesterday evening. So I was in the middle of doing an export from Aperture, and next thing, the terminal window crashed. Now, that never happened to me before.
Ooh.
What the hell? Okay. Then my Finder window crashed, then Aperture crashed, then Firefox crashed. One by one, every app quit, then the desktop died, and then the Mac became completely unresponsive.
Other than that, it was going pretty well. You could move your mouse around?
I could move the mouse, but both CPUs had gone to 100% and the fans were going at full power, and I couldn't click on anything. The desktop had blanked itself. The menu bar had lost all its icons, apart from one or two of those statusy ones.
Hmm.
And the dock was gone.
Wow.
Okay. So I held down the power button to stop the thing going, you know, at 90.
Catching on fire.
Reboot it and hope for the best. I soon noticed that the machine was not back to normal, and it became very clear very quickly how I could trigger it to die. If I went in any way, touch the folder temp in my home directory, which had been the folder I was working in at the time it all went belly up,
ooh,
I'd trigger it. So if I opened the terminal, I could browse around the entire file system, but the moment I went CD space temp, the Finder window, or the terminal crashed. I could open the Finder and browse around a few folders, but the moment I went into my temp folder, gone.
Ooh. So
and Spotlight was also...
Disk permissions or something, maybe?
Something on the disk in the file system was obviously completely messed up.
So did you start with the disk permission check, or where'd you start?
Well, that was my first thought indeed, but I soon discovered that it wasn't just that folder that had gotten messed up, so had Spotlight. So I couldn't actually click on the Spotlight icon to go and find disk utility. So every time I clicked on just the little magnifying glass, the entire menu bar crashed and would restart itself. And so I thought, okay, that's fine, I'll use the Finder. But the Finder wasn't working anymore either. It had completely died at this stage. So the only thing I was able to do was open up a terminal window and launch disk utility from the terminal.
Oh, okay.
And a really handy terminal command is open, which will open any file or program. So open space / application / utility / disk utility dot app will open.
You know,
disk utility.
I years ago, you may remember, I had my Finder crash on me, and it was while I was running an experiment to see how long I could go without rebooting my machine, and I was at 87 days, and my goal was to see if I could get to 3 months, so I wanted to see if I could make it that last 3 days, but I had no Finder. So I actually lived in the command line for 3 straight days, and I was able to even install applications from there.
Yeah.
So
anything that you would do by double clicking, you use the command open to invoke it on that file, and it's exactly the same as double clicking. So if you do open on a JPEG, preview will pop up. If you do open on a disk image will pop up.
Huh. Not.
And if you do open
slash
on a DMG,
I thought you used dot slash or something like that to open to run a file, run an
that
application.
That would be if it was a runnable file, but an application is actually a folder.
Oh, that's right, because it has package contents and all. Okay.
Yeah. So you just say open, and then the dot app, quote unquote, file, which is really a folder, and it pops up. So I thought, no, it's fine. I'll just do that. Nope, it came, and then it crashed instantly. Mm. I was like, yeah. So on my working Mac, I Googled keyboard combo for getting into safe mode, which is hold down shift, by the way. So reboot of the machine from the terminal, a sudo shutdown minus or now. Another handy one to know. Because my Apple button vanished too from all the menu bar crashes. And hold down the shift key. And one of the things about booting into safe mode, one of the first things it does before it even boots is it does a sanity check on your file system as part of starting up in safe mode. So it takes a long time to boot into safe mode because it's checking your whole file system. But once it came up in safe mode, I was able to browse around and everything was fine and my temp folder was fully accessible and normal. And when I rebooted the machine, everything stayed normal. The only side effect was that whatever I had done, it completely emptied all of my Spotlight indexes. So for about an hour, my machine was re-indexing my whole hard disk. Which took a while.
But it was all better then after the file system check?
Yeah, the file system check did the trick. So one way one sort of first thing to do if you suspect your file system has gotten messed up is just to boot into safe mode, and the actual act of doing that will trigger a disk check on the way up. Another thing you could do is you can boot from an OS X install CD and run disk utility from the install CD and then check your disk that way. And another thing you could do is you can boot into something called single user mode, which is a Unix thing, which gives you a terminal as root. But it doesn't actually do very much more. And then from there, you can run the command FSCK, which stands for file system check. And that's actually what disk utility does when you ask it to verify a disk. It actually runs FSCK. So you just do that from the terminal. Or the last thing, which the Twitter universe reminded me about, that I completely forgotten about, despite having paid for AppleCare for years, as well as getting you, you know, repairs on your Mac, AppleCare also gets you a piece of software called Tech Tools Deluxe. And that actually contains really good diagnostic software for finding problems and fixing problems and includes a physical disk scan. So what I will need to do later this evening, after we've done podcasting, is actually run a physical disk scan to make sure that the reason my file system corrupted wasn't because my physical hard disk is dying.
Right. So maybe a good time to run a backup too.
Oh, absolutely did that straight away.
Right.
So if you have a currently active AppleCare, you can download it. The link is in the show notes. And it actually asks you for the serial number of the device that you have AppleCare on. And once AppleCare expires, so even though I paid for AppleCare for 3 years on the MacBook Pro, because it expired last summer and because they wouldn't renew it after, you know, they only do it for 3 years, I actually couldn't download it. So I had to go looking for an old copy of the disk. So it's probably a good idea to download it now while your AppleCare is current, and you burn it to a CD and then you boot off that CD.
I thought we get the Tech Tool Deluxe CD with the AppleCare. At least we used to.
We probably do, but I've no idea what that white and red box is.
Oh, okay.
You get the latest version this way.
Yeah, that's true. Except it might be when you need it, it might not be the latest version.
Yeah, so it's just not a bad idea if you have AppleCare to take the time to make sure you have the latest version of Tech Tool Deluxe, because it could come in really handy. And if you only have one computer, then you would actually have to be able to do it on the computer that just died. Whereas I was lucky to have two, so I had one for Googling and one for, you know, one to fix.
Right.
And of course, there's third-party tools like Disk Warrior that also do very good disk repair stuff.
So it's kind of funny you should mention this topic, Bart. Let me ask you one question. Had you run the 10.6.4 update recently?
Yep.
So let me tell you a little story. We'll give your voice a rest for a bit. Take a sip of water and relax. So this very week on Steve's MacBook Air, he ran the update to 10.6.4. The update partially failed. It was kind of weird. It said it failed, but it had upgraded Mail and Safari, so they were a newer version than the OS could possibly recognize, so he couldn't open his Mail or Safari. But I'm pretty sure at this point we checked to see what OS it thought it was, and I think it thought it was 10.6.4, but it clearly wasn't. So I told Steve, I said, no worries, let's just download the 10.6.4 combo updater, which a lot of people recommend is a more stable way to upgrade anyway. So I go to download it. It's coming down at a blazing speed of 40 kilobytes per second. No, kilobits per second.
Ugh.
40. 40. Yeah. Actually, no, maybe it was kilobytes. It was kilobytes.
It must have been kilobytes.
I wrote that wrong. 40 kilobytes. Yeah. It was an 800 megabyte file, and it took about 3.5 hours.
Yeah, so it's like the olden days.
Right. So we wait for that to run download all night. And in the morning, he gets up. I get up, a couple of days after he does. I get up, and all I see on his Mac is a post-it note with a frowny face drawn on it.
Like, uh-oh.
Oh, no. He ran the updater. It said it failed. He rebooted, and it has a kernel panic on boot.
Yeah,
talk about meep. And there's no USB devices attached in any way, shape, or form to this thing. So,
yes, so none of the usual quick checks. So I'll just unplug everything because it's a MacBook Air. It doesn't have anything.
It's got nothing, right? So I rebooted it, of course, and got the same thing. And I'm like, oh, man. So no optical drive. What are you going to do? And a couple people said, oh, well, you just lose, you use air sharing to put a disk in a drive on another machine. I don't have a booted machine. I can't use air sharing on this thing. So luckily, Steve happened to have an external disk drive, DVD drive, optical drive made by HP, and I put in the original Snow Leopard installer disk, and we were able to boot the machine from that. So I thought, okay,
just you should actually be able to boot from a shared CD on another machine. That's the whole point. So if you hold down the Option key as it boots, you should actually be able to find that shared CD on the network and boot from it. That's how you would actually do the install on the MacBook Air in the first place.
See, I thought you had to be able to boot in order to do that.
No. That's why it was a big deal when they had this sharing thing, because it allowed you to boot from the sharing. So it's in the firmware somewhere. So you literally hold down the Option key, and then it should show up as one of your options.
Okay. We should stick that in the show notes, because I didn't realize the Option key would have done that. Well, anyway, so we had
it
this.
It should do that. I've never tested it.
Yeah, maybe I'll try it. So anyway, he has this external DVD drive, so we pop in the Snow Leopard installer disk, and it boots up just fine. We're like, okay, we're just going to start from scratch, and Steve doesn't keep anything on this machine at all. He just simply uses it for Mail and Twitter and that sort of thing. So no big deal. It doesn't matter if we wipe the disk. It'll probably run faster after that anyway. Let's just go for it. So we install. I start running the installer, and it gets down to about 41 minutes left. And 41 minutes left and 41 minutes left. And here we are 20 minutes later. It still says 41 minutes left. It installed. The disk isn't even spinning now. It's like, man. So I said, all right, let me try running Disk Utility from the DVD. Sounds like a good thing to do, right? As soon as Disk Utility comes up, the name of the drive is in red letters.
That's not good.
No, I'm not going, okay, that's not a good indicator. I don't think that meant everything's thumbs up. So I look at the Smart Disk Utility thing, the SMART, I forget what it stands for, and it basically says, dude, you're screwed. This drive is toast.
Yeah, that's something people don't realize, that Disk Utility actually has smart support, because assuming smart says A-OK, it ignores the smart data and doesn't show it to you, but the moment smart detects an error, it goes bright red.
Right. So, like you, I thought, okay, well, I'll run FSCK. So I'll try to run in single user mode.
Yeah, but smart data, if there's a smart error, that actually is very serious, because that means it probably actually is dead.
Well, let's keep going with the plot. So at this point, I did try to run this FSCK, and it came up into a what looked like a command line window, but no command prompt. And it had scary little things like OS type not yet known. a lot of things I didn't like. So at this point, of course, my next move is to contact Your Mac Doctor from yourmacdoctor.com, the famous Pat Dengler. And I just said, okay, come replace the disk drive. And it's not a big deal, because he's only got an 80 gigabyte drive in there, and he wanted a bigger one anyway. And he keeps trying to convince me he needs a solid state drive, but I don't think we're going to go that route, because he wants a bigger drive. And so I'd have to, spend a house payment on it. So she suggested we take a round with Disk Warrior before we panicked. And she said that the Smart Disk Utility is more likely to give false positives than false negatives, so that the disk
might be
just
fine. Which is what you want, by the way.
Exactly. You definitely don't want it going, no, everything's good. Go on vacation.
That smoke is pouring into the drive.
Right. So Kyle raced over to her office on Friday, and she gave him not just Disc Warrior, but a spare MacBook Pro. You know, because, I mean...
Good old Pat.
he's got a fairly new iMac upstairs, and he's got a G5 in the other room, so this would be his third computer. But, you know, she knew
you
he couldn't be without
three,
a laptop.
Come on. How could you get by without three computers?
And now, I had a spare MacBook Pro, but I loaned it to Niraj 2 days before this, so that didn't work out. So anyway, so Kyle comes home, gives him Disc Warrior. It repaired 3 errors on the drive. And we said, okay, that's great. And we rebooted, and it came up with a kernel panic.
Well, but, yeah, because the disk is in a mess in terms of the 2 failed upgrades.
Yeah, you're thinking it's not good. So Steve was not discouraged. He went ahead and ran the OS installer from the original DVD in that HP DVD player, and the reinstaller worked fine.
Sounds good.
And I even convinced him to install 10.6.4 right away because I knew he was going to try not to, and it went through without a hitch, and it works fine.
The reason 10.6.4 had probably failed was probably because it ran into the problem on the disk.
Oh, not causing the problem on the disk.
No, I think, because it goes around rooting around at just about every system file in the place. And if it roots around and then runs into disk problems, you're going to end up with a complete mess as a result. A sort of a half-updated OS that is neither.
But why did
you and I...
Just know
whether it's coming or going.
Why did you and Steve both have similar problems right after 10.6.4 update?
Yeah, but Steve had smart errors. I never had anything physical that I know of. I just had a logical problem on the disk.
Yeah, but I've never seen
anything
like this before.
The disk utility never went right.
Okay. You think they're completely coincidental?
I think they're very different because I'm pretty sure I ended up with Spotlight data tied in a complete knot.
Hmm.
So that anytime anything tried to access that folder, it ended up tripping the fact that the metadata for that folder was buggered.
Hmm. Well, I may take a look in the forums just in case and see if anything interesting's going on in there.
Well, we can ask our fantastic users.
Ah, that's right. Anybody else have any buggered weird problems with it? He did have one really odd problem after he got Snow Leopard installed, but before the 10.6.4 combo updater, his menu bar apps began disappearing and reappearing. The entire menu bar in the upper right would just go blank.
It crashing then.
And then it would come up, and then it would go blank, and it would come up. And we, instead of trying to figure it out, we ran the combo updater, and it seems to have stabilized it.
Oh, good. But that does sound like a crash of something in the menu bar, triggering the menu bar to reload and reload and reload.
So I wonder what that was.
Maybe one of the menu bar updates now, maybe one of the menu bar apps now requires the latest version of 10 point whatever to run.
Yeah, that could be it. It could be it. So anyway, quite an adventure, but I think it's good to document all these different things that you can try before you panic. We may go ahead with the new hard drive anyway, just for, you know.
Or after you panic.
Yeah, after you panic. What is it? I was listening to Steve Stanger's The Mac Attack, and he was talking about when you have these problems, and he says, the first thing I want you to do, the most critical step, is take a walk around the block.
Or scream very loudly to get it all out of your system.
Right. Just do something to relieve that pressure and the panic, and then now let's start going through the steps. So,
as the clouds remove from your brain, then you go and try to fix things, because otherwise what you do is make them worse.
Isn't that the truth, though? I mean, how often have you been in the middle of a just you cannot figure out this horrible, horrible, horrible problem, and you go to sleep, you wake up, and you go, oh, yeah, I could do this.
Oh, yeah, that's semicolon. Ah, there we go.
Exactly. Oh, so we have something fun to talk about, too.
I was going to say, this had been the only thing I'd planned for the show.
All right, we're 33 minutes in, and now we're going to start our topic, so.
Well, do you want to go ahead with it, or do you want to hold it till next week?
Oh, that's kind of a tease, but I wouldn't mind a little more time to play with it. Should we just tease it out here?
Well, if we're already over a half hour, then there's no point in rushing it, because there's actually quite a bit to talk about here.
Yeah, I think I'd rather have more fun with it. And we're always scrambling for a topic anyway. Should we give them a teaser of what we're going to talk about now that we've teased it?
Well, a website that we have given quite a few... Let me see, how do we usually describe it? The community is great, but you're going to have to get over the crappy interface. Well, the interface has been renewed and it's not so crappy anymore.
You're not going to tell them what site it is, huh?
That should have given it away. Only last week we used that very phrase.
Right. And I complain it more than just about anyway. And plus, maybe your voice will be happier by then.
I sure hope so. Excuse me now, I have a mint in my mouth to try things out.
Well, you do sound fine to me, but I was worried about you. All right, well, let's go ahead and hold that one until next week. And does it look like all systems are go?
I have no idea, but we'll figure something out.
All right, sounds good, Bart.
I think my parents have realized that until they have internet again, I probably won't be visiting. Because what Mum said is, we probably won't see you for a while then, will we? And I was like, maybe.
Oh, you know, we talked about that before we started recording. Tell them what happened.
Oh, a salesman knocked on the door. Basically, they had satellite internet, and it wasn't cheap, and it wasn't that great, but it got them on the line. But because Ireland's at the edge of the footprint of the satellite, it's actually low in the sky. So it's geostationary, but it's very low in the southwest. It wasn't the southwest. Well, anyway, it's low in the sky. And we have a hill behind the house with trees on it. And it was fine in the winter. And then as spring came, the reception got worse and worse and worse as the trees came into their full leaf. And by the time all the trees had all their leaves, there was no signal left at all. And the connection was just completely dead.
Oh, like it wasn't bad enough. It was horrible because of those, what were they called, drummels or something?
Well, the drumlins, they're a very nice roll basket of eggland is what they look like. They're made by the Ice Age. So they're sort of smooth hills that are elongated like an egg.
I think they're alien pods.
They certainly look like that, actually, but they're quite normal.
Okay.
Ireland's full of them. And our house is built on one.
Okay.
And on top of that drumlin is a forest. So it's not just a few trees, it's a forest.
Okay.
Which is what's blocking the signal. So they had to get different internet. And a guy conveniently came knocking on the door selling MiFi and service with a company called Three, who you may remember from much swearing while we tried to use my Three dongle to record a few years back. It was about 3 years ago now.
I don't remember that as being a happy time.
No, it wasn't a happy time. So they came knocking on the door to say that they had a brand new mast in the area, and so they were selling their MiFis and blathering on about 8 megabits a second speed and bloody bloody blah, cheap monthly contract, yada yada yada. And so my dad said, "Yeah, sure, great, I'll have one of those, please."
Okay.
I protested that Three were not a company with which I had a pleasant track record.
Right.
And I'm not alone in that. A couple of my friends, I told a friend of mine in work, and he swore at me. I was like, "I know, I told him." he had such a bad experience. It took him 3 weeks to get out of his contract. It was very, very bad. But it turns out that the mast, which is physically built and we can see it, it's three drumlins away, doesn't seem to be switched on yet.
So they built a tower. They built a mast.
They built a tower, but his signal is zero. Zip. Nada. And they're billing him for it already.
Oh, no. I
don't think that billing is
going to
stand.
This sounds familiar. I remember them telling you, "Oh, look, there's a tower right there," and then they'd run away and you'd realize that wasn't on.
Well, what they used to say to me was, "Oh, no, there's new towers coming on stream and the connection's bad now, but it'll be fine in 2 weeks." And you'd ring back in 2 weeks. A little longer than we thought, it'll be fine in 2 weeks. And a year later, it still wasn't fine. So I told them to get stuffed.
Right,
and then
right.
They asked me if I'd, rather than cancelling the contract, if I'd like to pass it on to a family member. I told them I wouldn't inflict it on anyone.
Yeah, that's like, "Hey, you hate our service. Would you like to give it to your family member?"
I was like, even my worst enemy I wouldn't inflict with this garbage.
I'll give it to your mother.
Yeah, the guy barely spoke English and was in India. So okay. It was, I don't think he understood what I was saying half the time. But anyway,
all right.
He eventually got the message that I had no intention of doing anything with their company ever again.
So they're not going to keep paying for this without service, I hope.
I don't imagine my dad is going to give that salesman. He got the phone number for the sales manager for the area, which they should never have given to him, but he got it, and he's been using it.
Oh, dear.
So I don't imagine he's going to be billed for very long.
Good, good, good. So you can't visit Mom until they get internet. So that seems only civilized.
Well, you know how much I complain about going over to having bad internet. Imagine going over to none. Because they got rid of their not DSL, what was that other one? ISDN line a couple of years ago, because they thought they had broadband when the satellite was installed, which was fine until the trees grew.
Well, I'm glad you have that standpoint, because I would not like it if you were there and you had no internets, because then how would I talk to you?
I go bonkers, because even dad has an iPhone, but doesn't work at home.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know, no cell phone works unless you stand in a certain room and holding it out a certain window.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Well.
So it's very likely I'll be here next week unless Dad has an internet miracle.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week then.
Okie dokie. Until then, happy computing.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the show today. As always, I had a great time with the Nosilla Castaways in the live chat room. I really look forward to talking to these guys. Why don't you come by and visit us sometime? Meet people from all over the world to discuss soccer or not discuss soccer, what their kids are up to, learn about different cultures, recite Abbott and Costello skits, and occasionally pay a tiny bit of attention to what I'm saying, at least enough to remind me to save. How can you participate? By heading over to podfeet.com/live at 4:30 p.m. Pacific time every Sunday night. In the meantime, keep your emails coming by sending them to allison@podfeet.com and follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.